Welcome to Clot Talks. I'm Emma.
And I'm Ryan. Today we're going deep on one of the most controversial companies in European tech history, Rocket Internet.
And I want to start with a story because there's no better way to understand what Rocket Internet actually was than to hear what they pulled off in 1999.
Go on.
Three German brothers, Oliver, Mark, and Alexander Samwer, they're in their 20s. They go to Silicon Valley. They see eBay. They come back to Germany. And in roughly 100 days, they build an eBay clone, call it Orlando, dominate the German auction market, and sell it to eBay for $50 million.
In 1999. Before eBay had even thought seriously about Germany.
Exactly. eBay paid $50 million to buy their own product back, essentially. And that's the Samwer playbook in its purest form. Find the best US startup, replicate it faster than they can expand, become the obvious acquisition target.
It's audacious. I'll give them that. But let's be clear, it's also completely cynical. There was no original thinking. No new problem being solved. Just pattern matching and execution speed.
But Ryan, execution is enormously hard. Everyone knows what Airbnb is. Not everyone can go build it in 18 markets simultaneously.
That's a fair point, and it sets up the tension we're going to be pulling on for the next 40 minutes.
Fast forward to 2010. Groupon is the fastest growing company in US history. The Samwers launch Citi Deal, a Groupon clone, across Europe before Groupon has even properly expanded outside America. Within months, they sell Citi Deal to Groupon for $126 million. The company hadn't even launched publicly yet in most markets.
$126 million for something that wasn't even live. That's not entrepreneurship. That's arbitrage.
Or it's reading the market better than Groupon's own international team.
And then there's Wimdu. Airbnb clone. They raise 90 million euros in record time. Airbnb panics, considers acquiring them. Doesn't. Airbnb wins. Wimdu is dead.
That one hurt. 90 million euros. Hundreds of staff. Gone.
Because sometimes the original comes back and fights. And that was always the risk.
But the successes more than paid for the failures. That's the story of the whole portfolio. Let's get into who these brothers actually are before we go further.
Right. Oliver Samwer is the architect. He's the one who sent the email.
Oh, we have to talk about the email.
We'll get there. But Oliver was the visionary, the intensity. Mark was more the operator. Alexander was the connector, the network guy. Together they formed this triangle that other companies just couldn't replicate easily.
They studied at WHU, which is Germany's most prestigious private business school. Then they went to the US, did stints in tech and VC. They came back with this outsider's perspective. They could look at Silicon Valley and think, right, which of these will work in Germany, in France, in Brazil?
And crucially, they built a factory to do it at scale. Not one company at a time. Many, simultaneously.
The Rocket Internet model at its peak was genuinely impressive in its operational sophistication. You had standardized tech stacks so engineers could move between portfolio companies. You had a talent pipeline, mostly young MBAs from top European schools, thrown into CEO or COO roles in Lagos or Jakarta at 26 years old.
Which was exciting if you wanted that. And genuinely brutal if you didn't know what you were signing up for.
The hours were intense. The targets were unrealistic. The culture was, let's say, demanding.
I've spoken to people who worked there. Blitzscaling before blitzscaling was a word is how one person put it. Which tells you something.
At its peak, Rocket Internet had 30,000 employees. 110 plus companies. Operations in over 110 countries. That is a genuinely staggering footprint.
And the IPO in 2014 valued the whole thing at 6.5 billion euros. On the Frankfurt Stock Exchange.
Which felt like vindication. Like the clone factory had grown up into a legitimate empire.
And then it fell 90%. And was delisted in 2020 at €18.57 a share.
We need to come back to that, because the IPO story is, it's almost operatic in its collapse.
Let's first talk about the genuine successes, though. Because I don't want this to be a one-sided pylon. Rocket did produce real companies.
Zalando. That's the one that needs to lead.
Zalando was a Zappos clone, online shoe and fashion retailer. Germans thought it was insane. Germans won't buy shoes online, they need to try them on. Rocket built it anyway.
And it worked. Not just worked. It became one of the biggest fashion e-commerce companies in Europe. It's publicly listed in Frankfurt. Market cap has been consistently above 8 billion euros. That's a real company by any measure.
I'll give them Zalando. That's not just a flip. That's a real business built from scratch.
HelloFresh. Meal kit delivery. Zappos clone for cooking, I suppose.
More of a Blue Apron clone. And again, people said it couldn't work. Logistics nightmare. Too much customer churn. Peak market cap was something like 20 billion euros.
20 billion. That's not a rounding error.
It's come down significantly since then. But it's still a real operating company, publicly listed, genuinely serving millions of customers.
Lazada, Southeast Asian e-commerce. Sold to Alibaba for $1 billion. That's Rocket taking the model to emerging markets, which is actually where the clone playbook worked best in the mid-2010s.
Because there was an even bigger window in Southeast Asia, Africa, Latin America. The US originals weren't going to Sao Paulo or Jakarta in 2013. Rocket was.
Jumia, African e-commerce. Listed on the New York Stock Exchange. Still operating in multiple African countries. That's a real footprint.
Also massively unprofitable and has had serious questions raised about its numbers. But yes, it exists, it operates, it employs people.
My point is, the portfolio generated real value, real jobs, real infrastructure. And the successes, Zalando especially, seeded a whole generation of European operators who went on to start their own companies.
That's your strongest argument for Rocket's legacy, Emma, and I think it's a fair one. The alumni network is genuinely significant. Hundreds of people who got early exposure to high-growth operations, who raised capital again and built other things.
Exactly. Rocket as operator school. That's real.
But let me give you the case against. The Blitzkrieg email. 2011, Oliver Samwer sends an internal email. Someone leaks it. And in it he writes, and I'm quoting pretty closely here, "I will work till I die or Rocket wins." It's Blitzkrieg. He talks about burning every competitor, taking no prisoners. The language is militaristic, aggressive, almost deranged in its intensity.
To be fair, every founder writes emails they wouldn't want published.
Sure. But the thing is, the email perfectly captures the culture. And the culture had real costs. The churn. The burnout. The companies that were cloned, raised capital, hired staff, then ran out of money when Rocket withdrew support or when the model didn't work.
How many companies were there that just quietly died?
Dozens. Probably more. The holding company structure made it easy to bury failures. Launch, see if it sticks, pull funding, move on. The employees left holding the bag.
That's a genuine criticism. The asymmetry. Rocket got the upside, the founders got the experience, the junior staff got the CV line.
And the IPO. Let me walk through this because it's important. In 2014, Rocket goes public at 6.5 billion euros valuation. The pitch is, we're a tech holding company, we have this portfolio of high-growth emerging market businesses, trust us on the valuation because the underlying assets are worth it.
And institutional investors bought it.
They bought it because of the zeitgeist. 2014 was peak tech IPO enthusiasm. SoftBank was leading these huge rounds. The story made sense in the moment.
But the underlying companies were almost all unprofitable.
Deeply unprofitable. And Rocket was charging its own portfolio companies for services, tech, HR, marketing support. So it was extracting fees from companies that were losing money. The holding company economics were genuinely broken.
Plus, the window was shrinking. By 2015 or 2016, U.S. tech companies had figured out international expansion. Airbnb was in every country. Uber was everywhere. The gap between U.S. launch and international arrival had gone from 3 years to maybe 6 months.
Which killed the model structurally. The entire Rocket thesis depended on that window.
Think that's right. The model wasn't killed by bad execution. It was killed by the thing it was exploiting closing up.
And the stock reflected it. Slow bleed, then a collapse. Shareholders who bought at the IPO lost 90% of their money.
Oliver Samwer took the company private in 2020 at $18.57 a share, which means he paid a fraction of what IPO investors paid.
Which is, look, legally fine. Commercially smart. But it tells you something about who the ultimate winner was in the Rocket Internet story.
Is it fair to say the IPO was essentially a liquidity event for the Samwers dressed up as a growth story?
I think that's pretty close to accurate, yes.
That's harsh.
But not wrong.
Okay, so what is Rocket Internet today? Because it still exists.
It's a private holding company. Effectively a family office adjacent VC and PE fund. The big factory model is gone. They still have stakes in various companies, they make new investments, but there's no more of launch 10 countries simultaneously Lenergy.
Oliver Samwer is still very much involved, still running it, still clearly ambitious.
But it's a very different beast. Much smaller. Much quieter.
And here's what's interesting to me. The original Rocket model was, find what's working in the US, clone it for markets where it doesn't exist yet. That model might be dead. But the underlying insight that there are still gaps between what exists in Silicon Valley and what exists in Europe is absolutely still true.
That's actually a great segue, because we compiled a list of US products that have no European equivalent today. And some of them are remarkable gaps.
Let's go through them. Number 1, vertical SaaS for the trades. ServiceTitan, HVAC, plumbing, electricians. It's valued at $9 billion in the US. Helps tradespeople run their entire business. Scheduling, invoicing, customer management, dispatch. In Europe, almost nothing comparable.
And the barrier isn't just building the software. It's the compliance layer. Different countries have different VAT rules, different employment law, different trade certifications. It's genuinely hard.
Which is why no one has done it. But that's also exactly the kind of moat that makes it worth building.
Number 2, SME Payroll and HR. Rippling and Gusto in the US are both multi-billion dollar companies. For the DACH region, Germany, Austria, Switzerland, payroll is absurdly complex. Minijobs, Kurzarbeit, social insurance contributions that vary by canton in Switzerland. No one has built a single product that handles all of this cleanly.
Personio is trying in Germany, but they haven't fully cracked the cross-border piece.
And the opportunity is massive. Every small business in Germany has a payroll headache. If you can actually solve it, not just partially, you've got a product that's genuinely sticky.
Number 3, Home Services Marketplace. Angie Home Advisor in the US. My Hammer in Germany exists, but it's weak. The reviews are thin, the quality is inconsistent, the UI is a decade old.
And demand for tradespeople has exploded post-COVID. Finding a reliable plumber in Berlin is genuinely harder than finding a decent restaurant.
Number 4. And this is my favorite one, Germany's DiGA program. Digital health applications that are reimbursed by statutory health insurance. This is a real funded pathway for digital health products. The German public health system will actually pay for your app if it meets clinical criteria. And yet the number of genuinely great products taking advantage of this is still tiny.
It's a massive opportunity. You have a built-in pair, you have a regulatory framework, you just have to build something that works clinically.
Which is hard, but the reward is proportional.
Number 5, creator economy. Substack, Beehive, paid newsletters, creator monetization. There is no European version that has meaningfully won. All the European creators with real audiences are on US platforms.
Language fragmentation makes this hard, but someone could own the German newsletter space, or the French one. The markets are large enough to support a real business.
Number 6, and this one feels very 2026, EU-hosted AI coding tools. Cursor, GitHub Copilot. Great products. But they store data on US servers. For European enterprise software teams working on anything sensitive, financial services, healthcare, government, that's a blocker.
Data residency requirements under GDPR are real. An EU-native AI coding tool with a genuine data residency guarantee could win enterprise deals that Cursor simply can't touch.
And number 7, legal tech. In the US, you have companies automating contract review, legal research, immigration paperwork. In Europe, every country has different laws, different courts, different languages. It's a genuinely fragmented market.
But fragmentation is a moat if you can crack it. Once you've built the compliance layer for German contract law and French employment law and Swiss corporate structures, good luck to any newcomer trying to replicate that.
So the opportunity map is real. The gaps exist. The question is whether anyone is going to build them the rocket way, or whether we need a fundamentally different model.
Let's talk about what founders should actually take from the rocket story. Because I think there are genuine lessons here. Beyond, don't IPO a portfolio of money-losing companies.
Lesson 1. Execution moats are real. A lot of founders spend years searching for a truly novel idea when there are proven business models that just haven't been properly executed in their market. Speed and operational excellence can be a competitive advantage.
I'd add to that. Regulatory moats are often bigger than product moats in Europe. The German payroll problem isn't primarily a technology problem. It's a compliance knowledge problem. Whoever builds the deepest compliance layer wins, and that layer is genuinely hard to replicate.
Lesson 2. The window is a real thing. If you're copying a US model for Europe, you need to ask, how long do I have before the original comes here? And you need to be honest with yourself. Airbnb came for Windu. Uber came for local ride-hailing clones. If your entire strategy depends on the US company being slow, you need a plan for when they wake up.
Lesson 3. Portfolio thinking can be a trap. Rocket tried to launch everything simultaneously. The failures didn't just waste capital. They diluted focus, spread talent thin, and created a culture where individual companies felt disposable.
Which they were, from the holding company's perspective. But not from the employee's perspective.
Right. And that misalignment ultimately damaged the brand. Smart operators started turning down Rocket offers by 2016 because they'd heard the stories.
Lesson 4, and this is maybe the most important one, build for permanence, not exit. Orlando, Citadel, those were built to be sold. That's fine if that's your explicit goal. But Zalando, which became a real company, happened because the founders had genuine product conviction and a long-time horizon.
The Zalando founders, they were given more autonomy than most rocket companies. They pushed back on central control. They built something with genuine culture. That's not a coincidence.
Lesson 5. Emerging markets are genuinely different. Lazada in Southeast Asia, Jumia in Africa, the rocket model worked longer in these markets because the window was bigger. If you're thinking about where the next rocket-style opportunity is, it's probably not in Western Europe or the US. It's in markets where digital infrastructure is still being built.
That's where patient capital and local knowledge matter enormously.
And lesson 6, be honest about what you're building. Rocket spent years insisting it was a tech company when it was a venture holding company. That mismatch between narrative and reality is what destroyed trust with public market investors.
If you're building a holding company, build a great holding company. Don't pretend to be something you're not.
So, is the rocket model dead or evolved?
I think the pure form of it is dead. The conditions that made it work, the long window, the cheap capital, the naive public markets, those are all gone or much diminished.
Agreed on that. But I'd push further. I think the clone model was net negative for European tech. Not because it didn't produce any value, or it did. Zalando is real, the operators it trained are real. But the capital and talent it consumed could have funded more original companies. And the culture it created, that European tech is a derivative of Silicon Valley that set back the narrative of European innovation by years.
I genuinely disagree. The counterfactual matters here. In 2010, European institutional investors were not confidently backing original deep tech or B2B SaaS plays. The risk appetite wasn't there. Rocket gave them a model they could understand, proven in the US executing in new markets. That recycled capital seeded the next generation.
Or it just gave them a false proxy for real tech innovation.
Some of both, probably. But I'd rather have had Rocket than not. The ecosystem is bigger and more sophisticated because of it, even if the model itself is gone.
Fair. I'll concede that the alumni argument is strong. The people who went through Rocket and survived went on to build genuinely original things. That's a real contribution.
And the gaps are still there. Which means the insight behind Rocket, that European markets need someone willing to execute fast on proven models, is still valid, even if the holding company structure isn't.
The next Rocket might look like a focused founder with deep local knowledge, one country, one vertical, real product conviction. Not a factory. A workshop.
I love that framing. Not a factory. A workshop.
Oliver Samware would hate that metaphor.
He would. He'd want a weapons forge.
Which tells you something about why the model ultimately burned out.
It does. You can run at blitzkrieg intensity for a while, but you can't build a lasting institution on it.
All right. That is a genuinely great place to land. Rocket Internet, audacious, innovative in its own weird way, genuinely consequential, and ultimately a cautionary tale about building for exit rather than for endurance.
Thanks for listening to Claude Talks. If you want to dig deeper, look up the Zalando founder interviews. They're fascinating on what it was like operating inside the Rocket system. And the Blitzkrieg email is still out there. Worth reading in full.
We'll be back next week. Until then, think about which workshop you're building.
See you then.